Attention musicians, I know if you're like me, being stuck in this quarantine, been sitting around playing every song you know. Are you looking to learn more songs? Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app for you. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs for over a million songs on guitar, bass, and ukulele. You also get a bunch of tools, man, amazing tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. Go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app from your app store today. That's Ultimate Guitar. Let's get down. Hey gang, are you new to this podcast? Have you subscribed on Spotify, Stitcher, or Apple and realized that you can only access the 20 most recent shows on these platforms? Do you, my friend, want to binge on How Did I Get Here? Well, you can listen to every show that we've ever put out on the Podbean app. That's right. Go to your app store, look up Podbean. You can also find all of your other favorite shows on there. Has tons and tons of shows. But you can go back through our archives and listen to Conversations with Sweet Spirit, Zeely, The Wind and the Wave, Ray Wiley Hubbard, Marsha Ball, Moving Panoramas, Dana Falconberry, Quiet Company, Dwight Twilley, The Blue Bonnets, and literally hundreds and hundreds, over 1,000 podcasts of just How Did I Get Here on there. Not to mention all of your other favorites. Just download the Podbean app from your app store and start listening today. Let's get down.
Did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Johnny.
When we talk. All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week. I hope that this mask thing hasn't freaked you out any. The new mask lifting thing. Crazy, right? What a crazy state we live in. Hopefully you might live in a state where people are sane. In fact, I want to welcome any new listeners to the show because today our guest, Steve Drizos, is from Portland, Oregon. So if you're just tuning into the show, my name is Johnny. I am a musician. I live in Austin. I've been playing in bands since I was 14. It's kind of freaky. I still play. I still make music. I still release music. And I started this podcast in 2011. So there's over 1,000 episodes. You can find them if you're interested in the show, if you enjoy what you heard and you want to hear more. There's conversations with all kinds of musicians from all over the world. But mostly guys from Austin, ladies from Austin, people from Austin. Here in my town where I live, I reach mostly to those people. But I do occasionally get to meet somebody like the great Steve Drizos, who is the drummer for Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons, and he's been a touring musician for 25 years as a drummer. And he had some songs, started writing some songs, and made an album. He's got a studio. He produces records out of it. It's called The Panther. He works there with his wife, Jenny Colley Drizos from the Decemberists. Anyway, this brand new album, Axiom, is fantastic, man. It's fucking great. And he produced and engineered the record. You can find him at stevedrizos.com. Anyway, Steve and I have a great conversation about making that transition from the back of the stage, behind the band, you know, playing the thing, to like being the guy. And of course, he's not able to tour right now because of COVID and everything. But he's doing some interesting stuff. I think he's doing a show from Portland on March 15th. I would say go to stevedrizos.com for all of your Steve Drizos needs. And as I said, those of you that are new to the show, thank you for listening. You can check out all of our shows are available at howdidigethere.podbean.com. The right-hand column has months and years. Just click on them. Do a roulette. See if you come across anything. And those of you that are regular listeners to the show, hopefully you'll be turned on to a great new artist, the great Steve Drizos. So enjoy my conversation with Steve. I did. And let's get down.
Better to
Someone just sent me 6 boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, dude, you're screwed.
I know. I'm fat.
Yeah.
I'm going to be fat. I don't know if I should eat them all at once or what.
Just get it over with or else they're going to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm feeling that. I'm feeling that right now.
There's narcotics in them, so they'll just, you know. It's a little known fact.
Well, I was like, well, since it's not going to be video, he won't see the chocolate in my teeth.
Fair enough.
So you're in Portland?
I am in Portland.
Yeah? All right. So this record, Axiom, is fantastic, man. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving me the time. And
of course.
It's an honor. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and it sounds great, too. So you recorded and engineered that all yourself. What all, you tried to play all the instruments on there. What all did you play? Everything on most songs except for where a couple people did stuff?
Yeah, basically I did all the, I'm a drummer by trade.
Right.
So I did the drums. I did probably 95% of the guitars and the vocals.
Oh, fantastic.
I played bass on one track and, you know, I just have so many spectacular bass players in my life that I decided, why do that?
Yeah.
And my wife is a phenomenal keyboard player, so she did keyboard parts and brought in some great harmony singers.
Yeah, you did. Who's the lady that sings with you on You Don't See That Now?
Her name's Kylene King.
Mm. Yeah, she's great.
She's really great. Yeah, she's and she does all the string parts on the record as well.
Which are gorgeous.
She actually toured with that Austin band, the Heartless Bastards, for a couple tours.
Towards the end of their
touring career, and she's. Last gig she's been doing is with Brandi Carlile, playing strings with Brandi.
Wow. Is she an LA person or she's a Portland person?
No, she's Portland. She's Portland. Yeah.
How are things going up in Portland right now?
Things are good. It's been a weird year. I mean, it's been weird everywhere, but
what are you talking about, man?
Yeah. I don't know. I've been in my studio for the last year. I don't know what's going on.
Well, that I will say that, Steve, is that one thing I hear from a lot of my friends that own studios. I have a studio here in my place, but it's mine and I don't live off of it or anything. But like most of my friends that have studios and work in studios, they're like, it hasn't really been that much difference, except I just can't go get a drink every once in a while with friends.
Yeah, it's really been pretty, I mean, I always feel weird saying this, but it's been pretty fortuitous. And, you know, I have been fortunate enough to kind of do a pivot with obviously touring coming to a grinding halt, to be able to do a lot of, remote recording gigs, remote mixing, some in-person, sessions, so it's been, you know, the studio's been kind of saving my ass during this pandemic.
That's great, man.
And in a lot of ways, it's the thing that I have always been wanting to kind of transition more into, less touring and more be home and work in the studio. And there's just always another tour. There's always something else that's kind of forced you to be like, I can't do this right now. I got to go back out on the road. And the pandemic has kind of forced that hand a little bit.
You know,
a little bit, like a lot.
A lot, yeah. I was listening to an interview with Steve Lukather from Toto.
Yeah.
And like, you know, those guys were all these studio guys, but then they got a record deal. They had their own band. But there was, I'm trying to think, there was one Percaro that wouldn't leave on the road for the first few years because he was like, when I leave, someone else is going to take my place. But I guess it works reverse too, you know, like you're out there touring and you're like, well, I mean, someone's offering me work. I mean, that's the same way I've been playing and touring, you know, my whole adult life as well. And it's like, you don't say no.
No, it's this thing that you always do the gig, you know, whether it's for a decent chunk of change or the exposure gigs, you know, it's like, and one thing that COVID has, I think, shown myself and a lot of my colleagues at you know, sort of the mid-level, if you know, the 300 to 500 seat venues,
right? Exactly.
And even lower, you're like, well, maybe I don't have to do that. It's like you get in this cycle of habitual touring. You get in the van and you go, and that's what you do. And then all of a sudden, you're like, well, maybe there's another way to do this.
Yeah, dude, I'm in this. I've been in this cover band since like 2002 or something, and we've been hitting it hard like the last 15 years and really being able to make a living from it. And like through COVID, like we had this big meeting just an hour ago where one guy quit because he was like, yeah, I don't want to go back to it. And another person was like, I think I need to find a sub because I don't think I can do it at the pace that it was done. I like this new life.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I know.
Do you have kids?
No, we do not. My wife's a touring musician as well. We kind of made the decision that we like our lives the way that they are. And, neither of us really wanted to give up what we were doing. So we have nieces and nephews that we love dearly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Those kind of, like, I'm the same way. I always feel like those conversations though are really hard for people with kids. They're like, oh no, you don't understand. It changes your whole life. You're like, ah, it's all right, man. I don't need it changed.
Yeah. I know. And, you know, especially during this last year where I see my friends with kids, like school age kids, just homeschooling. Oh my God. Just adding that stress on top of everything else. I was like, I feel so sorry for you. And I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. All right. That's enough small talk, man. Let's go back to this. You don't see that now song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous song, man. Unbelievable. And that singing that as a duet with someone, at first I thought it might have been your wife, but then I saw it wasn't, and I was like, okay, well, then it's not like I'm not going to start crying. But
yeah.
How confessional is that song, man?
That is, you know, that song is, it's probably the oldest song on the record, something I've been sitting on and toying around with for, over 10 years probably. So it was about a relationship prior to even meeting my wife, that I've always had kicking around, and it felt really weird to kind of have me sing it in its entirety from my perspective. Cause it was just like, it's kind of this breakup song, and then sort of sleeping around with people. And it's like, oh, this is kind of weird. Can I sell this? Am I still there? And I loved the song. So I thought maybe bringing in another voice to have it sort of be a duet kind of takes a little bit off of me and just makes it a little more universal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. Totally. Good choice, man, as a producer.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. And then just the long string outro was just really wanted to feature Kylene and all her glory and what she does best.
Yeah, she did an amazing job on that. So
she really did. She really did.
So
thank you so much.
How long have you been writing songs? Have you always been like a multi-instrumentalist, or did you start off as a drummer?
I started playing drums really young. My dad was a drummer, semi-professional musician, so he got me started really young. And but I started picking up the guitar probably around 16 or so, and, you know, brooding teenager who was, you know, no one understood my woes and problems, so I had to put them into poetry and song. But never really did much with them, never really had the confidence to do much with them. I was always in bands with what I viewed as such strong singer-songwriter front people.
Right.
That it was always kind of for my own, you know, personal consumption. And then I just got to a place where I felt like, you know, why not? I don't know. Maybe it's a midlife crisis. I don't know. But I started just thinking, you know, I have the ability to do it on my own in my studio. So, so just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
I was checking out your studio, the Panther, and I was just, when you said midlife crisis, I thought like, when I saw that Mellotron, those new Mellotrons, I played one on a session back in like, October or something. And I thought when you said a midlife crisis, I was like, guys like us, when we have a midlife crisis, we get one of those Mellotron things.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about the Mellotron, just to get off topic from the song. It's my wife. She uses it on tour.
Okay.
But I tell you, that thing is, I coined that thing the moneymaker in the studio, because you put somebody down in front of that thing, and they will just start, they'll spend hours just going through the sound. And I'll just be like, hey, you're paying by the hour, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is. It's a, because it has great organs on there. That's what I ended up using. If I ended up playing organ on something, and that's what I used was
great. The xylophone on that thing. You blend the xylophone in with a little, you know, the organ to get a little percussive sound, and it sounds amazing. It sounds amazing.
That's nice. So when did you start, like, okay, so wait, let's go back. So where did you live when you were a kid? Where did, with your parents?
I grew up in New York. I grew up in upstate New York, about around Albany, about 2 hours north of the city.
What? Okay.
And so spent my childhood there. I went to college in a town called Oswego, New York, which is outside of Syracuse, right on Lake Ontario. Probably the snowiest place in the continental United States. And I moved to Colorado in the 90s. I was in a band in the mid-90s to about 2004. It was a duo called Dexter Grove. And we toured a lot, about 250 shows a year for like 10 years.
Wow.
And so so we were based out of Colorado for a big chunk of that. And then we were kind of just, we're just in a van for many years. And then ended up in Portland in 2004.
Oh, nice. What? How did you end up in Portland? You wanted to be there?
I did. You know, it was one of those places of being on tour. I loved the music community here. I could tell that it was different. I think Austin, I felt that about Austin as well.
Yeah.
Just super supportive of itself.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like other musicians would go out to see other bands play and kind of hang out with each other and sit in with each other. And it was not like a New York or LA competition thing. It was very supportive of itself.
Yeah. It's a real communal scene.
That really attracted me. So that's why I decided to come out here with like $200 in my pocket and see what happened.
Well, do you know Ian Moore? He lives in Vashon Island in off of Seattle. Do you know him?
Who?
Ian Moore.
Yes, I do know. I do know Ian. I don't know him well. We have some mutual friends, like Scott McCoy from the Minus Five, is good friends with him. But yeah, I've seen him play a few times. He is fantastic.
He is fantastic. I toured with him a while back, like in 2007, I played like guitar and keyboards with him on a tour he did for a record called To Be Loved.
Oh, right on.
Really awesome. Yeah.
He's a rocker.
Yeah, he is a rocker, man. He's very fun, a very cool guy too. So when you got to Portland, did you like put an ad in the thing, or did you go hang out with people? Like, how did you integrate?
I knew quite a few people in the music community before moving out here, from being on tour and spending a lot of time here. I started playing in Portland in 95 or 96. And so it wasn't really that hard for me to make more connections. I know I now play with Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons, been with him for about 15 years. And so I had known Jerry for a few years before I moved out here. And so that sort of was a natural fit for me to start playing with him and gigging around and touring. You know, drummers are, they're in demand. I don't know if it's true everywhere, but it certainly is true here. So I had no problem finding gigs when I got out here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, even if you are, you know, there's great multi-instrumentalists as well, but it, like, the drum thing can get you so many gigs. So many.
Yeah, I was fresh meat, man. I was just like, and then, you know, then I got into the problem where I was, you know, also I was like an 8 band.
Right.
Whoa,
right.
Okay, this is a little too much. I'm like, you know, and there were bands that weren't, like, making that much money. So it was like, I'm spending all my time rehearsing and for, like, you know, a couple of $50 gigs every couple of months. So I had to pull back a little bit.
That's always a tough decision to make, isn't it? You know, like that,
it is.
Sort of like, do you, cause there's that thing. I how old are you?
I'm 47.
Okay. So yeah, I'm 52. So we're kind of the same age. You have that thing like
sure.
U2 or something where you're in a band, like a guy in a band, not, I don't know how many people grow up and dream of being like 8 bands trying to make rent. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But I know.
It's a tough decision to make because I feel like in a lot of ways I did so much just touring. But once this cover band was going, there's these things where people offer you gigs and they seem super fucking fun. You're going to play all these cool things and you're like, duh, it's just not going to be good. And then all of a sudden you start making your decisions in this different way and it feels weird.
It really does. You know, one thing that I figured out through my early time here in Portland is, you know, the only thing harder than getting a gig is trying to get out of a gig.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's so much easier to kind of like take a step back instead of saying yes and be like, okay, what am I getting into? And you know, like, you know, is it worth it? At some point, your personal time has a value, and I think when you're younger, you don't realize that.
Right.
But you get older, you're like, actually, just my time. You know, I don't have any free time, and it's important, and you need that.
Yeah, that's really true. So, did you? Over that course of doing all that stuff, how did you end up at a place where you stopped drinking and got sober?
That was a long time coming. Listen, like being in the music industry and developing a problem with drugs and alcohol is certainly not a unique story to myself. It's really hard to kind of wherever that line is between the party and the problem.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to decipher where that line is. I started seeing it, what my behaviors when I was like by myself. Just my mental health was starting to kind of go into some really dark places. And I tried to do all the things like, oh, maybe I'll just drink on the weekends or, you know, all these kind of self-governing things, and none of it was working. And my problems just kept progressing and getting worse. And so I knew that I had to make a change or else something, you know, probably pretty bad was going to happen. I had a colleague who had recently gotten sober, and he was like, actually, like, looked like he was enjoying himself and still able to work. And I just one night reached out to him, and that started the process for me. And it's been about 4.5 years now.
And how do you, I mean, obviously now you're at that phase where you're exploding with creativity, but from what I understand, there's a period from stopping to where you do feel comfortable again, where it's basically white knuckling it, if that's the right phrase to use there.
Yeah. It's having to relearn everything. You know, as far as playing drums, you know, I went out on tour pretty early on in my sobriety, which was important for me to do. I went to Texas. One of the like first shows I did sober was at the Hole in the Wall in Austin.
Oh, dude. And I don't think I've ever even been there sober.
I'm like, man, if I can get through this night, I'm pretty sure I can do anything.
Wow.
It's relearning how to do all these things that have been familiar your whole life, but through a completely different, you know, lens and, you know, things that you thought were your safety net. But you learn to do it. And you get over the fear. It's all fear, you know, it's like, I can't do this. And then you do it and you're like, oh, actually I can do this.
Yeah. It's weird, isn't it? That whole thing, the way it takes some people, you know, and it pulls them into like this weird, you know, like the tractor beam in Star Wars on the Death Star. You know what I'm talking about? Like some people just get sucked the fuck in and can't get out until they just kind of like let go of that whole part of their lives. Were there things that you've been dealing with your whole life that then you've discovered over the last 4 years that you hadn't been dealing with? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, why were you drinking? Do you know?
It mostly had to do with depression and anxiety. At some point, you're kind of chasing your tail around, you know, the drugs and the alcohol sort of, they obviously make you more depressed and make you more anxious about things. So it's just like you're on the merry-go-round over and over and over again. You know, social anxiety, stuff like that. I mean, it's the typical thing when you're younger, you do stuff to be cool and fit in. I wasn't like a sports guy, you know, I wasn't like, so like playing music and drinking was a pretty, you know, pretty easy way to like feel like I was cool and meet people and talk to girls and all that stuff. Think I was funny. And then that carried over to my touring life. And then, you know, when you're living out of the van on the road for 250 shows out of the year, like it's a coping mechanism to not think about all the crappy parts about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I had a talk with an ex-stepmom of mine a few years ago, and she was talking about how it must be, you're so high from the show that's why you get addicted to drugs, because you gotta take more drugs to feel the high you get from the show. And I was like, no dude, you take drugs because you sit in a fucking van all day with a bunch of dudes staring out the window, you know what I mean? Like thinking you're going to die. Then you're trying to haul an ass to get to a place where you have to fucking set up your shit really fast and then sit there for 7 hours.
In a bar.
Yeah, in a bar. Exactly. In a bar. Well, what would make these 7 hours go by faster? Being drunk?
Totally. And then, you know, when you're like not even at the shitty motel stage of your career, when you're staying on people's houses, it's like I have to be the last one up because that's my bed that you're sitting on right now.
You're right. Yeah.
I have no choice but to stay out because I can't sleep until you leave.
Right. So I do have to end up doing this 8-ball by myself.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the justification for this move here, lady.
Yeah.
So did you?
You
did,
know.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, I'm certainly not one of those people who like looks back and says like all that stuff is evil. You know, like I wouldn't change any of it. You know, sure. Some of my closest friends were forged over, you know, nights of just, you know, staying up till the sun comes up, and you know. Most of it was wonderful, and I'm not condoning that behavior, but, you know, I'm certainly don't look back and say that it ruined my life. It got to a point for me personally that I was like, I can't continue to do this, and I have an addiction, and there's nothing to be ashamed about, and I'm going to turn things around. And I'm so glad that I was able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you feel like you got your, you have your edge, you know?
Yeah.
Right. That's the thing that people are scared of. Creatives are scared of is that, oh, if I take this out of the equation, I'll lose my edge.
Yeah. That's bullshit.
Yeah. It's total bullshit.
The clarity, man.
Yeah. I've seen friends of mine become exponentially creative and prolific from just taking that one step, you know?
Yeah, I one of my biggest pet peeves is, you know, people who you know, are, you know, maybe super intelligent and they're like, oh, the rest of the world just doesn't understand me, so I have to do this to kind of like come down a couple notches to be on everyone else's level. It's like, that's just fear. That's afraid of like living to your fullest potential. Like, be amazing, man. Like,
yeah.
Don't feel like you have to dumb yourself down to so everyone else understands you. Like, just be amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the clarity, man. I mean, it's indescribable. It's you're in complete control of your life. Yeah. Absolute 100% control of every moment, and you are there's an awareness, and there's it's great.
Yeah. So how long did it take before you sat down and wrote that song Juggling Fire?
That was one of the first songs. That was the first song that I wrote in my new state of being, and I was probably about 4 months into my sobriety when that song came out. And it was kind of an exercise to do it. Okay, let's see what's there. And it came out really quick, and I was like, okay, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's the title itself lends itself to probably what you were doing at the time emotionally and mentally.
Yeah. I think that was the beginning of sort of realizing that I could make a record that has a theme, and I could be my emotions were already so raw and on the surface that I didn't have to dig. Some people would ask me, like, did you have to dig really deep to like write some of these lyrics? And I didn't, because I was just like kind of ripped wide open with just like all these emotions I had been suppressing for so long were all just pouring out.
You had access to them.
And I had access to them. And I'm a pretty private person in general. And just to be like, okay, let your guard down. Like, just put it out there.
Yeah. Well, thank you for opening up to me, even though you don't even know me. I appreciate that.
Thank you for
a lot of times the experience that somebody can relay that can connect with somebody listening to this show is probably a lot, they'll be a lot more likely to want to hear your music if you're not talking about the cool microphone you used on your drum, on your snare or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Which is ironic, because in my head, I didn't want my personal story to be, my sobriety to be sort of taking a spotlight of the record. In my head, when I was fantasizing about what people were going to talk about the record, I wanted it to be about the sounds and the production and all this stuff. And it just kept getting pulled in the direction of like, this is the story. This is what it's about. And that's what people are drawn to. So I stopped fighting. Like, this is what it is.
Right. That's the thing, is that like now, cool sounding record and production, people can do that in like an airport lounge on their laptop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's missing is somebody going through something and taking you with them, which you do very, very well on this record, man.
That means so much to me to have you say that. It's honestly, I was just following the thread, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was just like, where's this taking me, you know?
Sure.
It sounds so cliche to say that, but it's true.
No, but I mean, that's the thing. And sorry to go into this Star Wars reference trip, but like, you know, when it all comes down to it, the real truth is to just trust your feelings and use the Force. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it's weird, but those guys knew what they were talking about. Like in extremely heavy ways. Anyway, let me ask you this, man. So you put out this record, and now we're still in this thing. Are you, I saw that Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons, now I'm worried that I'm going to say Jack Morons because you said that. Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons, he's going to Hawaii. Do you get to do that?
He is. He was planning on taking his daughter there, and he's got a friend who's a promoter who apparently they can do some safe shows there. I don't really know the details of that. We did a few socially distanced outdoor shows this summer, maybe three or four, that seemed to be pretty successful, and everyone felt pretty safe. But outside of that, yeah, we've just been doing a weekly live stream from the studio here. And so that's been a godsend to be able to play music once a week, and our fans, it means a lot to our fans as well. People tune in weekly, and
yeah,
I think we're at week 48 or something like that now.
Wow, that's great. Well, what about you? What about Steve Drizzo? So you put out this record in January in the middle of a pandemic, and were you in your thoughts when you put this out, did you want to go do shows with the band, or did you make this record because the pandemic came down and you're like, oh, now I got time?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
It was almost finished. It was about 90% finished a year ago when the pandemic hit. But I never had any intention of putting a band together and going out and touring this thing.
But what about even like shows just there in Portland?
Yeah, I probably would have done. I probably would and may still do this. A handful of local shows. I don't know when the show is going to air, but this Sunday I'm doing a live stream of the record material. Okay. Yeah, from the studio.
Okay. Will you be doing more? Because this won't come out for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm doing another in-store at our big indie record store called Music Millennium on March 15th.
Oh, nice.
And outside of that, I don't know. You know, the thing is, once I'm doing it and getting more comfortable being a front person, I'm actually kind of liking it. And so I think I want to do more shows in the next few months.
Have you ever done shows as a front man guy?
No, never. Never.
You know, it's funny when you were saying you were writing your own songs, then you thought that that the people you were in the bands with playing drums for were better in some way. But then I was going to ask you during that time, or did you just not want to bring that horrible joke? What was the last thing the drummer said before he got fired? The, hey guys, I got a song.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, there was always a lot of insecurities. I mean, that's, you know.
Look, dude, as a front man, I'm going to defend us in this joke. I would say that by the time I was like, say, 27 years old, every drummer I had played with, when they said that, it was always like, you're joking, right? Because it was always like, guys, I got this song. It's kind of like Gino Vannelli. And you're like, no. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a simple where you're like, no one's really trying to be like Gino Vannelli right now, man.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, if you're going to start with that, like that's what you're going in with, then you're screwed.
It's based on this Pat Metheny groove. You guys don't know.
Yeah. Or it's something that's like you know, in 15/8 or something like that.
Right, so exactly. Yeah.
Show how heavy of a cat they are. You know.
Yeah, you're. See, that does happen. I did. However, I was in a band, and like we had a deal and everything. And our drummer brought us like the verses and pre-chorus without the melody and lyrics, but everything that we played in those things, like recorded on a 4-track, and that was like our first single. So I did meet a guy that changed my mind, and then I was more open to that.
Yeah. I have found too that you know, some of my favorite drummers are the ones who are also songwriters, because of there's a certain way that you get into a song when you write songs. You know, I was never the kind of drummer who like I had to have like all the chops or anything like that. You know, I'm very right. much a Bonham influence sort of meat and potatoes groove guy. And like, what's going to serve the song? Like, you know, I'm not afraid to, you know, like speed up on a chorus, you know what I mean?
Right,
like make
right.
things kind of human and add energy or like, and really follow the singer, you know, follow the singer.
Right.
Is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Even since the time of Elvis, who was that guy that played drums with him? Are you like you're an Elvis fan?
I know the one drummer I know was this Ron Tutt was his drummer towards the end.
Oh, it's that guy from the beginning in some super long HBO documentary. He was saying that like he knew where he was going to go by watching his hips.
Yeah. When I play with Jerry, I watch his foot and his right hand just locking in those.
Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it? I miss playing with people, man. I miss that. it's so weird to go from doing that for your life to not doing it. You know?
It is. And it's getting to the point now for me that it's foreign to think about being on stage with, you know, 200 or 300 sweaty strangers in front of you. Like that to me is like, ooh, that feels weird.
Yeah,
you know what
it
I mean?
Feels like, weird now. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But I just miss it. I feel like that's just part of who I'm made of. Walking into a club while the sun's still out, when it's all dark inside, no one's there yet, and stuff like all that stuff is like weird shit I miss.
Yeah. Yeah. The live stream thing is weird. It's a sterile environment, and there's. You know, there's nothing like being in that room, and you throw energy, and the crowd throws it back, and it's that magical thing that can only happen at a live show.
You know what I will say though about the live streams? I've never heard a non-musician say they suck. The people that are like actual music fans are just fucking glad to see someone playing, even if it is on there. They don't give a shit. It's us that are like,
sure.
I'm not getting the, no one's screaming my name today. No one clapped when I got to work today.
Yeah, how am I supposed to know if I'm good if no one tells me?
I have that problem, but I just like playing, man.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird, but it's what we got. It's what we got right now.
Yeah, it is. So, as a producer and engineer, you've worked with a lot of different people.
I've worked with some people. Yes.
I mean, Do you do full records there? Like, does a band come in? Do you do stuff with singer-songwriters and put together bands? Like, what's sort of your angle as a producer and engineer?
All of the above.
Okay.
One thing that I I think I've realized over the last year or so is that I'm much more enjoy being an engineer than I do being a producer, which is a weird, realization. Maybe it's, I don't know why that is. But to answer your question, we do, here at the studio, all of the above. I mean, I do full bands. I do singer songwriter. You know, we do a lot of overdubs. It's all over the place. Commercial work. My wife and I did a project where we wrote some music for Microsoft to like their on hold music.
Oh, fantastic.
It's really all over the place.
That's interesting. You know, that stuff is really that, I guess there was some kind of crackdown over the last decade on people using music without paying for it. Because last year, the year before, 2019, I got hired to do that for a morning show here, like a morning radio show, because they needed their own music that they could buy outright and not have to constantly pay for. But I hear about that a lot from like, oh, I just did this thing for people's on hold music, like you said, or like some weird, you know, fucking intro to a show or something.
Yeah, the commercial world especially is, you know, they want it to be, you know, how close can we get it to sound like this song without it being this song, so we don't have to pay for it.
Right.
It's a really interesting world, and it's kind of fun. It's a good exercise.
I think it is a good exercise.
Dive into these styles that maybe you normally wouldn't get into.
Well, it's also interesting to approach what we do that like something that's so you're emotionally tied to, that's a piece of inside of you that you pulled out, like this record Axiom, to have someone go like, what was one I did for one for a car place here like a decade ago, and they were like, we want it to sound like Born to Be Wild and who was that guy that, anyway, it was country guy, Toby Keith. They said, we want it to sound like if Toby Keith did Born to Be Wild, write that song. And it's amazing how fast you work when there's no emotion attached to it. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
how self-critical
totally.
You can be in those situations. You're like, yeah, this isn't Born to Be Wild enough, man. And you can really lay into yourself. And it's actually, it makes it kind of like super fun in this unattached way. And then the neato part is someone pays you money right then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's alluring. But then at some point you realize, man, I don't know if I could do this every day.
Right. I had a friend that, that was a guy that did that all day long in a place. When it was really lucrative. And then he amassed all this gear and had this just killer room, but no time to do anything cool. And then some giant advertising company that was here moved away and just sucked the life out of all that stuff. So,
isn't it funny how things changed?
Yeah.
You know, like I remember 20 years ago, you'd be like, you know, I'm never going to have my music in a commercial. I'll never do that. I'll never sell out.
And now
people are just, you know, clawing over each other to get their song in the next Subaru commercial or whatever. It's like,
I talk about that all the time, because I remember when I got signed, we got this publishing deal like with Warner Chappell, and I remember this talk about something, we want to use your song to sell this phone sex card, and I was like, you fucking, fuck you, man, are you crazy? And now I would give at least one of my nuts for those guys to call me again about the phone sex commercial.
Yeah. I know. It's where the money is.
Yeah.
It's one of the few places these days where the money is.
Well, it's funny. I remember the story that people told me that Moby was signed to Elektra Records, and he took his record into this president lady, Sylvia Roan, and she said to him, they listened to the record, and they were like, listen, buddy, this record has no commercial potential. That's the quote that they used. And then he was like, can I have it back? And they're like, sure, man, take it. Like, just take it. Like, you're fine. Don't worry about it. And then that was Moby Play, where every single song was licensed at least twice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like someone was definitely wrong in that equation. But it's funny, once that happened, then it became like that was the best way, like get your song in an iPod commercial or Led Zeppelin in a Cadillac commercial.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I love the Black Keys, but the last couple of records, it sounds like every song is written with the intention of being in a car commercial.
So what do you have on deck? Like, you have that thing Sunday you're going to do. Are you planning on doing some more Steve Drizos live streams?
Well, the only other one that's on the books is the in-store March 15th. So there's nothing on the books for that. We're going to continue with the weekly Jerry Joseph live streams.
Right.
I got the studio booked.
That's good.
You know, it's really hard to make any sort of plans. I feel like we spent so much time in the early days of the pandemic being like, well, when things open up again, we'll do this. So let's plan on this. And it just changes. And so we don't even plan. We just wait and see. So first thing I'm going to do is as soon as I can get on an airplane to feel safe is go visit my family in New York. That's number one priority for me.
That's good.
Hopefully this summer there'll be a few more opportunities to do some outdoor shows. I would love to do that with my own music as well as with the Jack Mormons. But in the meantime, I'm just trying to keep the studio booked, and people still are creative and they want to record their music. You know, it's funny, most of my bookings aren't the professional musicians because they don't have
too
any
broke.
Money right now.
It's
these people who are, doing other things and sort of do music on the side. God, it's some of the most creative music I've ever heard because there's no audience that they're playing or writing their music for. It's just this complete abandon of artistic freedom. And it's like, wow, this is amazing music that people are coming up with.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome to hear. I have good hopes then for the future. I can't wait to hear more of your music, and I hope to meet you someday, man. It's been great talking to you.
I can't thank you enough for taking the time and listening to the record and obviously getting to know some of the material. It really means a lot.
I connected with it when Alex sent it to me. I connected. I was like, this is just really fucking good and great. You're a great songwriter.
Well, thank you so much.
I would not fire you from my band if you told me you had a song.
Okay, great. It would be a long road before you heard it, but yeah. after you begrudgingly give me the time to listen to it.
Well, man,
fair enough.
Stay safe up there and take care. And this will be out in a couple weeks. And stay in touch, man. I'm saying it now, but when things open up or whatever, if you're ever back in town, hit me up. I'd love to meet you.
That sounds great. I appreciate it. You guys take care, too. You guys have been getting your ass handed to you down there from what I've heard. I got some family listening to San Marcos, and they've been telling me it's just pretty rough.
Yeah, it was crazy. But it's 70 degrees and sunny today.
Great.
Yeah, and the ice cream man was driving down the street yesterday. Who knows what's going to happen now? Yeah. It's pretty insane.
Crazy. I know. Just hang on for the ride and just keep making music.
Yeah, man. That's what we're all trying to do. Well, congratulations, man. People can find you at stevedrizos.com. They can also find The Panther, your studio, at thepantherpdx.com. I'll put links to all of that in the body of the text of this podcast.
That's great. I appreciate that.
All right, dude. Well, thank you so much for doing the show, man. Great meeting you.
Johnny Gotti, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to doing it again and meeting you in person, hopefully, someday soon.
Likewise, man. Take care.
All right, take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Went and got yourself better. Turn the ship around before it ran.
Steve Drizzo's gang, pick up his album, his brand new album, his debut solo artist album, Axiom. Go to stevedrizos.com and get involved there. You can find him on anywhere that you stream and download your jams, okay? Great conversation with Steve. I want to thank him for doing the show. It was really great. Great getting to meet him. And I look forward to meeting him in person someday. I've met a lot of people over the last year from all over the country, and I'm hoping that at some point, I met them all on Zoom. I hope they all start touring, coming through here. I get to go see them at shows, and we can bro down or sister down or whatever the hell we're going to down, you know, do the whole thing. All right, go to stevedrizos.com for all of your Steve Drizos needs. And don't forget, gang, when you are at stevedrizos.com, you can subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is that you stream podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, anywhere. New shows all the time. We're doing 3 shows a week for the month of March, and then we're going to go back to our 2-day-a-week schedule in April, all right? Just wanted to let you know that because that's how things is going. All right, man. Hope you guys have a good weekend. Be safe. I'm playing that show on tomorrow, on Saturday. Jesus. Fuck, I hope people are cool. My God. Stay safe. Wear your mask. Don't listen to the governor of Texas. That guy's an idiot. Have a great day, whatever it is you're doing. Have a great weekend. Let's get down.
If you really love that girl, you ought to tell her. And try to hold the line. You just might find a little peace of mind. The past will not forget. Better make peace with your regrets. You got the weight of a heavy soul, but not everything's out of control. There's a friend to call and a sink full of dirty dishes.